in which I have to be concerned about the whim of every individual. I have to make sure that everything I do is in line with what they want, is the situation of avdus. The situation of avdus is something that takes away from a person's life. No person, no human being could live constantly under the pressure of how others think about him, about what he does privately or publicly, and the way he acts. By the way, it's not just a matter of his political decisions. It's a matter of his personal life also, because he has to have a certain image. That's also important. After all, since everybody's a philosopher, so they only want to relate to a certain type of person who's in line with their way of living. So he has to make sure that his personal life is in line with the way the masses think is proper. And if it's not in line with that, so then again they won't. They have no respect for him, you see. So it's his personal life, the very decision-making process, and his personal life. The man is really a total slave, a total servant. That's what the result is. And living in that way is something which takes away from his from the span of his day, the span of his life. It's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says in Brachas, the Gemara says that, who was it? I think Rabbi Gamliel appointed somebody. And he said to him, he says, Klum shrara ani naisen lach. Am I giving you, shrara means, prestige, esteem, malchus. He says, no, avdus ani naisen lach. You're getting servitude. Why? Because that's what a leader is. A leader. Right, public servant, right. Leader really is one who is completely subservient, He's constantly under the pressure of the masses, and in the decision-making process, he's always under pressure because he can't. His mentality has to be such. He has to put himself in that mentality. So I want you to understand something. If he doesn't put himself in that mental framework, then he'll never be able to function properly. I don't think a leader could say, I'm really. I don't feel the pressure of the situation. You know what I mean? I'll just make a rational decision. It's impossible. He has to feel, to sense the pressure of the masses. He has to be sensitive to the pressure of the masses. He has to know, if I do this, one thing, this is impossible, I can't do it. So he has to be sensitive to that. He has to live in that framework, sense it emotionally. If he doesn't sense that framework emotionally, he'll never be successful as a leader. And to sense that emotional framework means to actually live emotionally like a slave. See? And that's why Shrara is Mekaveres Barlo. There's no independence, and that's in line with the Maimar Chazal before that. Rashi says that a person who is Mespanes Mikupa Shel Tzedakah also takes away from his life. Why does it take away from his life? Because he doesn't have independence. A person, it may be very tempting for an individual to want to partake of that dependent state and regress back to the infantile situation. See, where he's a dependent. Maybe very tempting to that person, but the truth of the matter is that psychologically it's not healthy. And a person who does that finds that there are other things that come into his life psychologically that distress him, and that take away from his mental health, and take away as a result of dependency. So even though the person that's oyev matanos, I mean, he feels that this is a trigger for him. He doesn't realize that another part of his nature is being distorted to the point where he could never really be happy. He would be making a much wiser choice if he would avoid the temptation of satisfying this regression, you see, and establish himself as an independent individual. Then he would have, on the whole, he would have much more peace of mind, and his days would be lengthened, you see, because that type of situation is one which distorts a person's mentality, and it's not natural for him to live that way, and he can't live happily that way. The same thing happens to the leader, because the leader is also in that dependent state. The way a person lives best is where a person is b'teach b'Hashem. B'teach b'Hashem means independence. He's independent. He only has concern about one thing: the creator of the universe, the creator of the system in which he's operating. That's the only being that he has to be concerned with, the source of reality. Then the person is independent, because then he's living in reality. He's not relating to any artificial entities. But if he's subservient to people, so then it has to take away from that free mentality. And that free mentality, that free mind, is something which gives a person a way of life, gives a quality to his life that there is no substitute for. You see? That mode, it's a mode of operation. I mean, when the Gemara says he carried the wood from one place to the other, and he'd say, Gedola Malacha, that was the experiencing, the enjoyment of just living with reality. Just living with reality. This is, that type of life is one which makes a person, gives a person tremendous psychological satisfaction. And that mental framework cannot be achieved in the case of the leader. It's impossible. Or in the case of the dependent on it. And as long as you don't have that mental framework, you really can never enjoy life. And if you can't enjoy life, and you're under stress, so it takes away from the years. Oh, well, you know, Chazal aren't concerned about taking away from the years. So what? Yes, live 10 years less, 10 years more. And what's the difference? Especially now. You look back in the Chumash, I mean, it doesn't seem to make much difference now. You wouldn't be here anyway. But the pshat is, what Chazal is talking about is not the fact that it takes away from those 10 years. The 10 years are indicative of a certain quality. Anything that takes away from a person's life, you see, has to, if it's especially if it's something that takes away from his life, not because of a physical thing, but because of a mental frame, because of the psychological factor, mental framework, you see, anything that does that shows that the quality of his life had to be lacking to a tremendous degree. The Rambam and the Mor also does it. The Rambam and the Mor, when he points out the foolish ways of living, he shows that people take away from their longevity because of the way they live. And why does he care? Not a matter of how many years he lived. Even the Rambam himself said somewhere that if a person dies at an early age, but he was perfected, he's much better off, much more fortunate. Because in certain situations, a person could sometimes living longer, he might not have met yet, whatever. But the point is, it's not the actual years that's important, but it's the quality of life that's important. That quality of life is only attained in one way. That's Batech Bashem. Batech Bashem means that he only deals with reality and the source of reality, which is God. Nothing else. Leader that really is led by the masses. He's phony. No, even a good leader has to put himself under that framework. A bad leader is one that will sell out in order to maintain his leadership. A bad leader is a leader who's leading for his own purpose. He wants to maintain his position. That's a bad leader. Bad leaders, the objective in a bad leader is that his objective is leadership, to lead. The objective of a good leader is to lead the people to bring to a better situation. But even a leader who wants to bring the people to a better situation also has to have this mental framework. He has to function in this mental apparatus, otherwise he can't be sensitive to the people. But the only thing is, what he has to try to do is to try to present it to them in a way that they think that they've achieved what they have. But he tries to present to them the true ideal. Or if he sees that there's something that's so harmful, he's better off not leading them. Then he steps down. See, that's a good leader. But even the best leader has to work with chachma, political chachma. You can't just get up there and just do what you say, what you want, because it's right. You have to know how to lead people. That's what Rabbi Meir mentioned. Rabbi Ben said, "Anechi arisis amazeh kisomai leisa ebechekach kashayisa amein esayonek." What Moshe Rabbeinu was saying is one thing to lead people and tell them what's right to do, but here you have to cater to their every whim and kasha yisomen and sayorik and treat them like a mother treats a child to make sure the child's happy and pacify them and yet work in a way that's in line with their benefit. I mean, this is impossible. So even the greatest leader has to work the way, otherwise they won't allow him to lead. But every political situation is complex. And as much as Yosef HaTzadik, he looked back into the Torah isn't interested in telling us all the details he went through. And that's not part of Torah. But you can be sure it's a very complex situation. Everything he did, and you see that at the end he did lose his position. He had to go to base power, he wasn't such a Shein L'Melech anymore. And Yaakov Vina saw it also. Because Yaakov saw it because he made him swear right away. Alma Supreme Hashem, why did he make him swear? So that when he goes to base power, he'll be able to say that the reason why I'm doing it is I swore. And they were superstitious. They respected this type of thing, so that's why he was able to affect them in a way that they'll allow him to bury Yaakov outside of Mitzrayim. But you see, the situation deteriorated. His leadership deteriorated. Until we came to the point, Shishalo Yeres Yosef, he really didn't know him. He completely blocked him out of his mind, and there was no relationship between the fact that Yosef was there and between the affect that should naturally follow from such a situation. It was a total repression. So that's that's why you see that every leader has to be concerned. No matter how simple it looks now, you can be sure it wasn't that simple at the time.
Yeah.
He's asking, what right does Rashi have to base his interpretation on the Maimer on a Das Yachid that explains that why did Yosef die before his brothers? Because he was 10 years before his brothers, right?
Yeah.
Because of the fact that he was a leader. There are other pshatim that are given there by Yosef. Moreover, you see, Moshe Rabbeinu was the greatest leader. Didn't die before his time. The contrary, it says, Lo chosa einav lo nos lecho. He was youthful, even at the time of his death. So, good physical health. So what right does Rashi have to base his interpretation on one pshat, you know? And we see it doesn't always work out. It didn't work by Moshe Rabbeinu. This. There are two types of perushim, really. There's a pirush where I derive something from the pasuk. See? It's true, there's another pshat. I mean, you're right, avdachovi. Some say every lost every 2 years for every time avdachov, because the interpreter was twice. Right, so therefore he lost 10 years. But when Chazal say, this is the very question could be asked on Chazal. How did Chazal know why Yosef died early? The pasuk doesn't give any indication. It just says the amount of the years that he lived. Does it say any reason? So what right did Chazal have to come along and say that that's the reason? The answer is that Chazal knew this from an analysis of the, from a psychological analysis of the situation. That's how they knew the idea of that Rabbanus is the Rabbanus is Mekaveres Baleo. It wasn't from the Pasuk. It was purely from Chochma that they knew it. But what they did was they cited an instance where it took place. It's a different type of chazal. It's not a chazal where you're deriving from the pasuk. As you can see, there's no real derivation there. How can you derive this? Because he died 10 years old. Well, there could be a thousand reasons why he died earlier. Who knows? Why Kadosh Baruch Hu is Makatsi Yamam Shalom? There could be many reasons. Yeah. So the answer is that this type of chazal is different. They really understood it through knowledge. They understood that this is the case, and they pointed it to that case. It says that since they were perfected people, we don't see any other reason. So it could very well be that that's the reason. It's not really a machlekas. I don't even think the other ones that there's an argument over here in the principles that are involved. For instance, the one that said Abdechavi, nobody argues and says that if a person is not Mechaved of, that he could lose his years. I mean, it's a pasuk in the Torah. All right? So it's not a machlekas. It's a question of where they hung the idea up in the Torah. See, this idea is related to this. This phenomenon could very well be expressive of this concept, but the concept really was one that was known to Chazal through their power of analysis. You see, and that's why Rashi has the right to cite it, even though it's only one pshat. But nobody disagrees with the idea, because if it was a machlekes, a real machlekes as to what the pshat in the pasuk was, then you'd be right. How can you cite with one side? I know he agrees with that side. Maybe he learns pshat differently. It's not that kind of a machlekes. Everybody agrees that the other possibility is also there. Not a machlekes whether kibbut ava is going to, a person's not going to kibbut ava, they also agree with that. But the question is, which factor it was? So it's mar machoda v'loy pliga, the Gemara says, a lot of times. It's not really a machlekes. The question of which one you think is more probable in this situation. But the basic ideas that underlie the situation, both agreed with. That's why Rashi has a right to draw from there, because it's not a chazal of machlekes. As you can see, it's not derived from the pasuk altogether. It's just something that's imposed upon the pasuk. Okay. Of course, as far as Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned, that was hashgacha pratis. That was chutz miderech hateva. Because lo chos ainav lo nas lecho. Everybody ages. He didn't age. His skin didn't age. Even if you will find a leader that lives very long. See, it's not really the length of years that we're concerned with. It's the quality of life. A person could live long for a lot of reasons. It doesn't necessarily mean that everybody's going to die. It's not the death sentence that we're concerned with. We live long, I mean, a very strong constitution doesn't affect them, who knows. But the point is the quality of life that Chazal were interested in. Something which takes away from a person's years means that there's something wrong there in terms of the way he's living, you see? And that's what's the harmful thing. That's to whether or not we're mispavel for whether longevity itself is a bracha. Yeah. So Raya was brought from Yiratzin on Rosh Chodesh. It's a shtidlan chayim aruchim. Chayim aruchim over there doesn't mean can't mean long life, because it's only asking for Chodesh is there for this month. 1 month you can't live too long. So you have to say what it means like this over there, chayim aruchim. Chayim aruchim means the amount of living that you derive out of the span of life of a month. That's what aruchim means. You see? That's why it's like Dashanim say, Yimei Shnei Senu Bohem Shivim Shana. Means that there is a capacity for 70 years, a maximum. But out of the 70, you can only live for 10. Even though you live physically 70. So Chayim aruchim over there has to mean in terms of how much you derive out of the 30-day existence. Not that you should continue to exist. That's not the existence per se is nothing. It means how much of the person's essence is really benefiting or partaking of life during that 30-day span. It could be a short amount, it could be a long amount. So you ask for Chayim aruchim, that it should be maximized. It should be maximized. The amount of living, of benefit of life that I receive out of that month span should be maximized. That's what Chayim aruchim really means. Interesting thing, by Kabbalah, it says L'man Yerichim Yomecha. And Chazal say, La'olam Shekul Aruch, which means quality, not quantity of years. Kul Aruch means you have a certain quality of existence. That's what it means. Certain things cannot be accomplished unless you work through certain mediums. Now, in leadership, you have to be sensitive to what the people are talking about, what they're after. The only way you can be sensitive is through your own emotions. You have to put yourself in that emotional framework. Otherwise, you have no system of picking up what they really want. You can't operate in your own philosophical framework. You have to put yourself in their framework. And that's why you have to function that way. You know what I mean? So then what does it mean? So it means that we shouldn't have any leaders. Nobody should be a leader. Right? That's a terrible thing for Claudius Rowe. Right? Case and there's no more leaders. What is this? It's bad suggestions, Nasser Abbas. I mean, if it wasn't for Yesh Vatzadik, let's take the case that Rashi mentions. Yesh Vatzadik, there shouldn't have been a Yesh Vatzadik. Yesh Vatzadik should have said, Snayas Rabbanus, and he should have right away declined. What would happen? There would be no Klal Yisrael. Very difficult to say that Yesh Vatzadik didn't know Snayas Rabbanus. That sometimes, you know, it seems that sometimes a person is has to be mosa nefesh. And has to do it in spite of the fact he has to do it. Because justice demands of him that he does it. So even though he has to actually give up of the quality of his life, of his own life, he has no choice. That's why otherwise, that was Yesh Vatzadik. And the imam is Yesh Kredem Echav. Believe me, Yosef would have certainly wanted to live as long as his brothers, and he knew he's a tremendous chacham. He realized what was going on with his own nature, and he had knowledge of himself. He had knowledge of Torah, knowledge of philosophy. Why did he do it? Because he recognized that he had to save Klal Yisrael. That was his job. So he had to sacrifice his own personal life in order to do it. Justice demanded that he did it. Moshe Rabbeinu also. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to do it. And he argued with God for 7 days, but ultimately God convinced him that justice demanded that he does it. And he had no thought the Rambam again. Okay, the Rambam. The Rambam says that b'bakoshas it's Ubibakosh Asra Varabonas, Yirulo Nisyonos Baolam Varos, or like Kapachas Vakoshos, Kimitneshi Yakanobo Bnei Adam, or Kimitneshi Yiskane Bnei Adam, Kapachas is the other way around. Yiskane Bnei Adam, of course, a little bit difficult. So that he's Mekane Bnei Adam, it shows a great imperfection. But anyways, Yachlaku Allah, I think, Ibn Tibbon's chat makes more sense here. She kind of bought the other Yachlaku Alav. How does he have it? The Kapach? She mekane b'vnei Adam va'omeid neged misnagdav. All right. I think Ibn Tibbon's chat is better. You have to see. It could be what the Rambam. What? I know, but the problem with Kapach is. Really? Like this, you have to know. Kapach's translation is a better translation in terms of the actual literal translation. See, word for word. But Ibn Tibbon had greater knowledge of the Rambam's ideas than Kapach. So that was the letter that the Rambam wrote to Ibn Tibbon. Told him, he said, a translator should not be a person who understands, who's a linguist, essentially, the Rambam says. Because a linguist will not be able to offer a proper translation. Says since many times the ideas, see, really language is just a vehicle for the ideas. And now many times just by linguistic translation, it will come out in another language that the idea will be distorted. You have to know the ideas of the writer. The Rambam insists that the translator has to know the ideas of the writer. Now Ibn Tibbon, the Rambam trusted because he knew that he was a great philosopher. And that he understood what the Rambam meant. He used to write letters, correspondence with the Rambam to find out at certain points what he meant. So you have to take both translations. You know, you have to look at both translations in a different way. That Kapach really translates more literally, which is important. It's important to know the literal translation. But sometimes very important because like the Rambam with Ishtamoda. Ram over there in Sefer Mitzvahs, where he says Lahamin in Ibn Tibbon's translation. It really means Leda. Of course, Ibn Tibbon might have used the word Lahamin to mean to know also. You don't know. So it's good to use both translations. But in Pshat, Ibn Tibbon was definitely better. Also, there's a question of whether the Ibn Tibbon we have today is really the same one, because it went through a lot of reprints, so maybe there's some mistakes there. So it's good to use both. But in this case, I would say that the Ibn Tibbon's translation makes more sense, and could be that when the Rambam wrote Nation Miskana, I don't know what the Arabic was, but it could be that it's put in a way that it has both meanings. Like Miskana Bivnei Adam could mean that he finds himself in a situation of envy. You see, doesn't mean that he is the one that's envious, but he finds himself in a situation of envy. You have to know the language, know the connotation of the language. Could be that literally it's miskane, but miskane could mean that he finds himself in a situation of envy, you know. But Ibn Tibbon, when he saw that, he put it into Hebrew. He put it in a way that the idea makes sense, that others are envious of him, because Ibn Tibbon was very knowledgeable in terms of the ideas, the concepts. So I would say in this case that Ibn Tibbon's translation is better. Okay. Moshe Amru, Kivin Shinismana Adam Parnas Al Tiba Mumata Nasa Rush Lamala. Once a person becomes a point to high position, high earthly position, so in terms of his heavenly position, he is reduced to a Russia. Okay. Raise was, what does Rama mean that, what is Rama discussing? A person that's that is an egoistic individual and is bakashas sarara. In other words, he wants to be a leader. He wants to have a power, and he's an arrogant individual, and he wants to he's looking for power simply. He wants to be a man of power, political power. Such an individual, you don't have to say his downfall will be because Yafsin Amanosa. I mean, a person like that is inherently a corrupt individual. A person that wants to wield power over other human beings. That's inherently a corrupt individual. What greater corruption could there be? So why does Ram have to go any further and say a terrible catastrophe is going to occur to him? And his whole essence is that he wants to wield power over others. It's a very base motive. So why does Ram have to say that this is a bad thing to do? Because if he does this, then other things lead to other things. What do you mean it'll lead to other things? Forget about what it's going to lead to. He's inherently a very corrupt individual in the eyes of Yadis. Yeah, maybe in today's society that's not considered corruption. But in the eyes of Yadis, that's considered a corrupt soul. Okay? It is like this. That there are two reasons that a person wants to be a leader. You see, two motivations, two possible motivations. The one motivation is the person wants to exert power over others. Wants to have power over others. Yeah, but there's another, it's possible for a person to have a better motivation for leadership. There's another reason that a person might seek leadership. And that is because the person, not that he wants to have power over people, but he has a need to feel wanted by people. See? He has a need to feel that he's wanted, to feel a sense of acceptance by others. He needs to be accepted. There's a need that people have to be accepted. So not always a person who's a political leader is one whose main goal is to have a lot of influence and power. It could be that the person is of a certain psychological nature, and that psychological nature is that he has to feel accepted, he has to feel wanted. Motivation isn't such a bad motivation, really. Not such a bad motivation. You can't call a person, certainly you can't call a person a Russian or an evil individual. It's a weakness in his character. A certain weakness in his, in the structure of his psyche. Certain character defect. So a person who has that defect, I mean, doesn't in any way mean that he's an evil individual. You see, he has to deal with it. He has to deal with it. So one way that he could deal with it is a direct way, which is to place himself in a situation where people feel that they need him. So this satisfies his need, you know, and he feels fulfilled in that situation. See, that's the type of person that the Rambam's discussing. You can't say the Rambam's discussing a person as a power monger. You have to say the Rambam's discussing a person who has a psychological need. And therefore, the Rambam says that this psychological need is such that if it's mishandled, it can result in a worse situation. Okay? All right, now let's see. Now, what does the Rambam say? So the Rambam says that b'bakashas asror of rabbonis ye'erolo nesyonos ba'olam b'kashas kimneshe yekanabo b'nei odav yachliku olav yafsin emunaso k'moshe omru kivneshe b'shin esmano n'pasal tzimot nasa rosh ma'ala. What does Rambam mean? Rambam is like this. Very simple. It's that means that since he's a person whose very purpose in seeking out the leadership is because he wants to feel needed, now in the situation of leadership, it's very, very difficult to put yourself in such a situation, because there are others that are seeking this power and that are your competitors. So you get yourself in a situation, you find yourself in a situation where you're being attacked from all sides. Now, when you're being attacked, so you have to defend yourself. Now, you're going to have to defend yourself in a way that you're going to try to be appealing to those people that you want to lead. Right? So what happens is, in your attempt to be appealing to those people you want to lead, you're going to have to compromise your values. And once you compromise your values, then you lose your emunah. That's what the Rambam is. This is not the way for him to satisfy that emotion, because he's going to find himself in a situation where there's tremendous conflict and tremendous battles, and they're going to attack him, and he's going to have to compromise his values. What happens? He really wants to do good and is interested in the true good, so he will recognize that the compromising of the values is not a good. And therefore, he won't do it. You know what I mean? In other words, if his goal, if what's in front of his mind's eye is always the good, so then he will see that many times the good would be to lose the position. That's the good, rather than corrupt the people. I mean, we know in Yadis, we don't compromise. So even the Vim never compromised. Their intention was to do good. Never compromised. Can't compromise. Can't compromise the truth. There's no compromise. It's not the truth anymore. So, therefore, an individual who is only motivated by the desire to do good will never be in a situation. There's no such thing as a compromise for that individual. What? Well, danger of compromise is the individual that has ulterior motives, has other considerations as to why he wants to be in that position. Personal considerations. So he has personal considerations against the truth of the system. So there's a conflict. So Ram says he's going to have to, he's going to be in a situation where he has to compromise. The pressure is too great and he has to compromise. And once he compromises, then what happens is that he loses his, once he starts compromising already, then he starts moving away slowly. Because he can't face the, his religion anymore. His religion makes him feel too guilty. So then he starts moving away completely. I want to point out more clearly why, how the person is for, how is the person, you understand how the person is forced to compromise his values. You understand how it works, how is he forced in a political situation to compromise his values? What it means is that you are trying to appeal to certain people. Now, there are a lot of people after this position. Now, people are vying for your position, so that what they do is they present them, they try to present the masses with a more appealing figure. You see? Now, you, in order to be even more appealing, will have to compromise your values to make yourself attractive. Yeah, because, you see, that's the way it works. In other words, you have others attacking you, vying for the same position. You want to be attractive to the masses. You want to be attractive to the masses. There's only one way to be attractive to the masses, to do what they want. And what do they really want? They want to fulfill their tithes. They don't want restrictions. So therefore, you have to compromise your values. You see, if there was nobody else that wanted the position, it wouldn't be a problem. So, yeah, you can keep your values. But the point is there are other guys that want it. And they're trying to, they try to knock you down and try to show that they really are offering a better better situation for the people, right? Therefore, the, what happens is ultimately, the way you get the people is by being very palatable to them. How do you do that? You take away things that are difficult, that they don't like, which means the value system. That's the way it works. Actually, it's like the conservative rabbi versus the orthodox rabbi. That's what it is. From the Tanakh, from Avshalom. And Avshalom, how did he start? How did he become a leader? He used to stand outside the court where David HaMelech was being done. So he'd come out of the, they'd come out of the court and he'd speak to the Baal HaDinim. What happened over there? So he'd speak to the one that was that lost the case. And tell him, he says, boy, if I was a dying, you certainly are right. I mean, Tanakh, of course, Tanakh does it in a simplified way, but Avshalom was no fool. I mean, he knew how to make it sound like he's not trying to get the guy, but he really believes the guy, and he's really right. He's really a just man. He said. So he picked up a lot of followers, at least half of the people followed him. that's the way you win over people. You see, you cater to their desires. Not to the truth. If people were only had a desire for the truth, they wouldn't need any leaders. See? So that's the way it works. It's in a position where it was leadership is there because most people want him. So he has, he fulfills the need that way. But there's another way that he fulfills the need. That since he becomes an important person, see, so when he relates to people on an individual basis, they have a tremendous amount of respect for him. Like I remember reading, they had in the New York Times, they had, you sent me that article over there, on, they had an article on power, you know. So they had one of the, they had the politicians face their cessation of office term, you know. So, so they say that one guy said that, last week the phones were ringing and I was the most important person around. He says, now nobody even comes calls me on the phone anymore, you know. So, and they get very depressed because, like, all of a sudden, it's a tremendous drop. I mean, the presidents and the senators, and all big politicians, they when they lose their position, they get a tremendous low. They get into a depressive state many times because all of a sudden they're unimportant, they're not needed anymore. So it's not just among the followers themselves that the person gets the acceptance, but once he's an important individual, people look at him differently. Like a different gavra, see? And whenever they talk to him, they have a certain respect, a certain awe, and he feels when he, in his relationship with people, he feels a certain sense of acceptance and of being wanted and importance. This, this is really the, I think personally, that's more effective than the fact that he's a leader of a lot of people. That's like a lot of people are like out there, it doesn't really affect him emotionally. Emotionally, he's probably affected more on the one-to-one basis. where people, everybody that he meets, he comes in contact with, given tremendous respect, and they express a certain feeling that he's important, and they want him, and they need him. They do need him. So from that source, he derives his feeling of self-worth, and it satisfies that need, satisfies the need for acceptance. See what the Rambam says? That is what? He's needed. He's an important, he's a powerful person, so he's needed. Yeah, he is actually needed. When people come to ask him for favors, I mean, he's needed. Yeah, fact is, he's needed. The last thing from Shem ben Shetach, I mean, from Shmai Vavtayan, is Al Tesvada L'Rushas. What? L'Rushas. So Rashi says, L'Rushas is Shilton. Shilton means the one that is in power, in high command. The person that has a lot of control over the highest control over the people. Okay, means don't become known to the monarch. Okay, shouldn't be friendly with him. See? So Rashi says Shein Mekarvel La'Odam Al Tzarach Atzman. Rashi says that the heads of state themselves, they only are close to you because they when they need you, and when they don't need you, they drop you. That's what Rashi says. The leaders of the heads of state are corrupt, and since the heads of state are corrupt, so you're dealing with corrupt individuals. And why are the heads of state corrupt? It's the thing I want to mention. So it's a lot to say. Is the reason why people are not corrupt is not because they don't want to be corrupt, because they have government over them. But the heads of state have nobody over them, so therefore they're corrupt. So what happens is that this person, I mean, he's like a Stalin. So he'll use you, and then when he needs you, and then when he doesn't need you, he'll destroy you. No. It's more than just he'll drop you. It means that he'll really once you get known in there, once you get in there, then you get destroyed. You see, the thing is like this, really. I mean, if you look through, well, let's say you study study a little bit about the history of a person like Stalin. You find what happens. So some people try to get close to him, and he raised them in certain positions. And then they have to get killed. They have to get bumped off later. Because what happens is that when they're in a position, at the time he needs them, so he raises them to a high position, then they have a certain position. Now how do you justify it? Now later they're in his way because there's certain ideas that they don't share. So they're in his way. So how does he deal with them? Can't demote them. And you just said yesterday to the people that he's a great man. And today you're going to say he's not great. So you have to get rid of him solemnly. So that's how it works. So what happens is that you just become an object of utility. To be an object of utility is a very dangerous thing. Because if the person that you're an object to has total power, so what happens is that when you're in his way, he has to remove you. And many times it happens politically, you're in his way. You can't just say, this person, well, I don't agree with this person. I mean, this person has a certain position, he's elevated that person to a position. How are the people going to understand it? So the only way you can do it is by removing him. Okay? Really, what it means is actually, in today's society here in America, I would say, I'll despite all the Russians means, don't have any dealings with the mafia. Same type of thing. That's what Russia learns. Because, Shein Mekarvin Lo'odom Elo Tzarech Atzman. Means, you see a big mafia leader, and he can help you out, give you a loan, set you up in business. That's terrific. But ain't mekarvin la'odem al tzarach atzman. The day comes when he needs you, and he might decide that you owe him a favor in return, which you might not be ready to give. Then you're in trouble. That's the same thing. Basically, it's the same. It's the same situation. Yeah. According to Rashi, the Mishnah that Rashi's quoting, it says the same thing. What is the chiddush of this over that? So Rashi says it's the same thing as this. Rashi is actually quoting that Mishnah over there. So the question is, why the repetition? Bottom, it's interesting. You see where the asterisk is? Baltisvada la Rashis, it means, he says it means, on the bottom, Srara ha'oimedes me'eleha neged achok. That's really mafia. Srara ha'oimedes me'eleha neged achok. See? Now on the other Mishnah, I don't know who wrote this in, but in other Mishnahs have a Zahir Barashas. He says, Pira Shilton Ha'omed Mershus Atzmo. Apparently, whoever wrote that was trying to answer the problem that you asked. What? Problem there. Somebody was grappling with a problem. It's the same thing. In other words, he just changed his lashon. It means the same thing. Sra Ha'omedes Me'eleha. Neged achok, and the other one is Pir Shilton Ha'omed Mershus Atzmo. I mean, it doesn't seem, it seems to be, I don't know if it's one thing or two. If you take it literally, over here it means that there's Yisrael Ha'omedes Me'eleha Neged achok, means that it's like a mafia, that it's against the existent law. Shilton Ha'omed Mershus Atzmo means a monarch. That's Shilton Ha'omed Mershus Atzmo. See? Not a democracy. He seems to be saying two different things. Over there in the Siddur says they're making it into one thing. I think it means two different things. But I think it's still the same idea. The question is why the repetition, according to Rashi. Davos Reb Nosson on this. Davos Reb Nosson seems to say Altis Vada L'Rashis means literally Altis Vada. He should not be known. Not that he shouldn't have any dealings with them, but he shouldn't be known by them. You see, that's why the Avos Reb Nosson says that if they should hide from them. Of course, if they know about you, then they're going to destroy you. That's what Avos Reb Nosson learns. It gives a mushel of a person who somebody announces how many cattle he has and how much he has. Next day they come and they take it away. So, according to the Avos Reb Nosson, it's Altis Vada means literally. And over there, Avizoyer means that you should be careful with your dealings with them. You should be careful with your dealings with them. But if you'd know one, you'd know the other, I would say. According to Rashi, how do you put this member together? What are the three things? What is the common denominator in the three things that we have here? You have Elvis Amlacha, right? Snowas or Abonus, Baltis Vada L'Rashis. So what's the relationship between these three things? Should live. Elvis Amlacha, according to Rashi, means that a person should live in he should live in the mature world of reality, and not revert to a situation of dependency, dependent mentality. You should avoid the dependent mentality, right? That was Elvis Amlacha. Snowas Rabbanus means that he can't live in the world of reality if he's in Rabbanus, because he has to live in the world of the emotions of the people, right? Has to put himself in their emotional framework. Yeah. It could be according to Rashi that the tie in the Mishnah. Yeah. Rashi doesn't mean over here about the Svadal Rashi in Makarvon Lo Adam Lo Tzarach Atzman that you're going to suffer ill effects. That's the next Mishnah. Nirim Ka'ov Mishas and Asma Enam Lo Adam Mishas Dochka. What Rashi means is that since in Makarvon Lo Adam Lo Tzarach Atzman, so therefore you always have to make sure that you're in line with that Tzarach. That you're in line with that Tzarach. Right. And therefore you will you have to corrupt your value system. Therefore you have to corrupt your value system. Yeah. And Rashi doesn't learn it's not a bonus because of the corruption. Rashi's just talking about
a difficult task to do.
Like this, that the thing is that really this Mishnah is discussing, let's start from the beginning. The Mishnah is, I'm not saying, it's possible that's the Pshat, it's possible that Rashi means that he'll be corrupt. But the only thing, see, Rashi didn't mention corruption all along. The Rambam would be very good. The Rambam does say corruption.
Rashi meant that, but he's very short of it. Well, let me just try to think of another point of view. According to Rashi, let's start off with the first thing. What's Avos HaMelacha really? Avos HaMelacha means that you shouldn't be in a dependent situation, right? You shouldn't go back to that dependent situation. Now the thing is, the truth of the matter is that there's an attraction to either to two situations really. See, and they both go back to the infantile state. There's an attraction to a state of dependency. See, because you're going back to the state of childhood, and there's equally as well an attraction to the state of authority, because the child sees the authoritative figures of his parents. So really, both states, as opposite as they are, really have their attraction in the situation of early youth. There's a person could even vacillate between two states. He's even the two opposite states: his desire for dependency and the desire for authority. So it could be that what ties this Mishnah together, that's really the theme, the central theme of the Mishnah. And the first one is that you shouldn't fall into the state of dependency. And that's Avos HaMelacha. Snoas Rabbonis means, but simultaneously to get thrown into the opposite state of mind, which is the state of authority, is also bad. See? That's essentially what Rabbonis is, the state of authority, an authority figure. It's also bad. And Altisvada Larushis, I would say, carries both. It has both. Because the Russius, if we say Russius, is like mafia. So on the one hand, he's dependent, see? But on the other hand, he's linked up with a powerful force. He's a part of the mafia. There's a certain prestige, a certain authority. So it really has both. It has both together. It's like he basks in their glory. So the thing is that that's why the member, that's attraction. That's the format of the member. The member is really discussing the most basic phenomena that attract the person from early youth. Okay, one is the dependency situation. That's Avos HaMelacha. The other one is just the opposite. To be an authority figure. Rabbanus. Okay? And Rushus is really a compromise between the two. Rushus really has both. Has dependency, and also by identification with a powerful figure, he also has authority. That's why the Chazal say, Hischaber l'shachvar v'yishtachvulach. Attach yourself to an important person and they'll bow down to you. See? And it's true. It's true. I'm sure the only guy in Shamus got a lot of covet. All together in the Valtis Vada Larushus. He says, V'chein yediyas ha-shilton v'yomim ha-kadmonim. Does he have v'yom ha-kadmonim in Tachan? V'kirvosok rochol koyem ma'ol v'notzil mimeno ba'olom hazeh. Dos, or Manoso. Kilo yashgiach b'dover rak mashi yikrivu elav. Vata yodea inyin doeg. So Ram mentioned the story of Doeg Adomi. Vafa pisha shalra shakar ve'lov doeg hoya Mashiach Hashem. So even though the ruler, that doeg, attached himself to a certain leader, who was the leader Doeg Adomi attached himself to? Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech was Mashiach Hashem. Nevertheless, the Ram says, he says, Shaul Mashiach Hashem, v'novi, does he say v'novi in there? I don't say what's the Shaul's novi. Anyways, so it says Mashiach Hashem. Benavian. Okay. Does he have the word Navi?
No, he says
Navi.
Oh, yeah, he does.
He says Navi. How come Shaul Benavian?
He says
Navi.
Okay,
he's not. Okay. I say he's a Navi. Mashiach Hashem v'Navi u'b'chir Hashem Yisbarach. Yeshua, that's right. Gam Shaul Benavian. So Mashiach Hashem v'Navi u'b'chir Hashem Yisbarach. Even though the person he was miscarriage to was a Navi and was a Mashiach Hashem, still in all, it was disastrous. What was the catastrophe that came out from Doeg Adomi? Do you remember?
No
Virkanim. Do you have a Tanakh?
No what?
Says Saransas, Shlomo, this is like Yopshat Saransas. That the problem is with Tzvada L'Rushus, because he will, since he attached himself to the Shilton, so the man has to always be concerned, make sure that he's in line with the reasoning of the Shilton. And that can, even if it counts as doing something which is corrupt, evil, so he still have to do it. Alright? And that's the case of Doeg Adomi. He says, and even though he attached himself to Mashiach Hashem, the Rambam says, still didn't help him. Still he did a terrible thing. What was the story over there? That was Shmuel Aleph and Chaf Aleph. So it says, in the town of Nova, Tachimelech HaKohen, Vayechran Achimelech Likras David, Vayom Alamadu Atol Avadecha Vayin Ishitach. Vishenitach. Okay? So, well, not everybody knew at the time that David HaMelech was being chased by Shaul, that Shaul was trying to catch him. So David HaMelech did a smart thing. It was all alone. So he went to the city of Nov, and Achimelech the Kohen came out. In those days, news didn't travel too quickly. So Achimelech, the last Achimelech heard of David was after David's victory over Goliath. So he was a famous person. So when he saw him, he said, how is it you're all alone? Nobody else is with you. You know, it's not a famous person. He's traveling with a lot of people. Not the rush. So he said, no. He says, I'm on a secret mission from the king. See? He says, Ishal yedemum asadav ashenach ishalecha. Okay? Now he says, whatever you have, give me. Give me the supplies you have. Vayan akainas dav vayomar. Ein lechem chol el tachas yodi kim lechem kodesh yesh im nishmur an or mach meisho. Okay, that's a lach of Tahara. Vayan davar esar kan v'yamala kim isho atzur olano kismol shoshom. So it's kachim, so it couldn't be nechal batumah. So he said we're tor. Okay, vayitin lo akoin kodesh ki lo yashom lechem kim lechem apanim amusorim lefnei Hashem. Okay, and that's what happened. So then it says, Vishom ish me'avde shol b'yomahu. And on that day there was a man who was a servant of one of the servants of Shaul. Netzar lefnei Hashem. Interesting phrase. Netzar lefnei Hashem. Ushmo doeg adomi. Abir haroim ha'shel v'shol. Abir haroim is an avbezn, Rashi says. Abir means strength. Abir haroim. It was an avbezn. Big Talmud Chacham. What does it mean, Netzar lefnei Hashem? Interesting thing. Netzar lefnei Hashem. Rashi says, Otzer atzmo lefnei ohel moed lasot b'torah. A man sat and learned day and night in front of ohel moed. Just sat and learned Torah day and night. Netzar lefnei Hashem. Say. Vayom adav l'achimelech. So that was l'achimelech. Ve'in yesh po tachas yodcho chanis ochorev. Do you have any armor? I wasn't even supposed to take along my armor. I was in a rush. I didn't have a chance to. I guess it didn't make sense taking it. So take the sword of Goliath Saplishti. Right. See, hang up there. Vayama David said, "Ain kamoha, there's no finer sword than that one. Tenenoli, give it to me." Vayakam David vayivrach bayamahu mibnei shol vayavo alachish melargas. Okay. Right. Okay, that's when he made himself like crazy. Okay, good. Now, what happened later? What happened later was that heard that David is gathering an army, he has people, and he said he gathered the people, his friend, his cohorts, the ones that were his subjects, he gathered them together. He said like this. He said, "Shimuna b'nei ha'amini, gam l'kulchem yitin ben yishai sados ha'kromim, l'kulchem yosim sorei halofim ha'sorei meos." Now listen, he says, "Will David give you the positions that you have, that I gave you?" It says, "Ki kesharetem kulchem olai vein goles ozni bechras bini and ben yishai vein chola mikem olai." He says, "You have benefited from me. I mean, I've given you everything: sados and krumim, position, wealth." He says, "Now is that fair? That after everything I gave you, that now you band together against me, and you don't tell me about the fact that David and my son Yonasan are together?" He says, "Vein chola mikem alai, and none of you are sick about me." In other words, you don't share in the emotional grief that I'm going through. Ki hekim benias avdi olai la orev kayom hazeh, that my son took my worst enemy And he set him up against me. I mean, you know what kind of a tragedy that is? And nobody helps me. Nobody tries to help me out of the situation. So it says, Vayan doeg adomi. V'hu nitzav alav deshav v'yomar. Ra'isiyas ben Yishai bo nova. Alachimelech ben Achitov. Vayishlach hamelech. So immediately Shaul called them all in front of him. So he says, "Vayomer Shaul, Shmana ben Achitov, Vayom Hini Adonai, Vayom Elo Shaul, Lomo Keshartem Olai Ata Ven Yishai." See, "V'sitchol Olachem V'cherev V'Shaul Belekim Lokom Olai La'Orif Kayom Azeh Vayanachim Melachas Hamelach." So Yesu said. So David confronted him. I mean, Shaul confronted him. Said, "How can you do this?" So he said, "Vayana Achimelech Hazmar Vayomer." Achimelech said, "No. Umi bechol avadecha kedavid neeman v'chasan hamelach." He says, "What do you mean?" He says, "David is the most trusted. He's the son-in-law of the king because when he defeated Goliath, so Shaul gave him his daughter." So v'chasan hamelach v'saro mishmatecha. He listens to everything you say. V'nich bad v'esecha. One of the most honored in the house. That was the last news we heard. You see. He says, "Cholila, I should do anything against the king. Kilo yodav lecho b'chol zos. Dover cut no gadol. I never knew. I didn't know that he's your enemy." Vayomar melech, "Mos tomos achimelech. Ata v'chol beis avicha." That's right. Then he went and they wouldn't. Sobav amisu kahane Hashem. So Shaul said, "Now you should go and kill the kahane Hashem." So he says, "Kigam yodam and David." They were also. He was just paranoid. Was setting in. They didn't want to do it. Here it says Doyeg. His name was changed because I'll say why. So vato fagaba kohanim. Vayisov Doyeg Hoadomi Vayifkahu Bakohanim Vayomas Bayomahu Shmonim Vachamisha Ish no seifod bud. Terrible tragedy. It's an interesting thing. So Chazal say over here that when he was supposed to, when he was commanded to destroy Amalek, so he wanted to destroy the animals. Tough. But over here it says, "Me'ish v'ad'isha me'olel v'ad'yonek v'shor v'chamor v'sel v'ficharav." Kill them all, destroy them all. Interesting, huh? What was the thing? By Doeg, what does it say? Only one thing in Tanakh says about Doeg. What does it say? Netzer al Hashem. What does Netzer al Hashem mean? What does Netzer al Hashem? Netzer al Hashem mean what? Netzer al Hashem means the man. He learned. He learned day and night, but the motivation for his learning was to feel a certain tremendous sense of tzidkus. See, and that's why it was Pesach Ha'el Ma'ed. See, where people could see. Open. Because I'll say a person shouldn't learn in an open place. Or I said a person should learn quietly, privately. So Netzel of Hashem is openly, he had to have the acceptance of people, and he felt very comfortable. You know, there was a certain feeling that he's in line with his conscience, like a superego type of thing. See? But a person whose motivation is of that nature, that's his motivation. He's a great Talmud Chacham because it says that he was not Bezdin. But a person whose learning is for that reason, that's the motivation for his learning, is subject to another defect, and that is that he will be in line with the one who is the greatest power. Okay? That was the Yishol. That was Shaul. So first of all, he told what happened. It seems an interesting thing. It seems he didn't right away offer the information. It was only when Shaul started pressing him, because he said, "Kikshatam alai kochan, then gola ozni, then cholam ekem alai." Then Doeg responded. Apparently, he knew. He knew that it wasn't the right thing to say anything. See, but under the pressure of the situation. He gave way because the other emotion took over. See, the other emotion took over. Doesn't necessarily mean that a person has a defect that in every situation is going to express itself. You see how nicely Tanakh presents it, you know? That at first he didn't say anything. Then Shaul gave him a pep talk. And then he responded, because then when Sho put pressure on him, that emotion, and now is the time for me to be the favorite of the Malach. That emotion took over. And that's what happened that's what happened. That's why not only that, but he lost all that. That's his doyeh. And he lost all my ball. And killed. And then he actually killed him. He actually killed the Kana. Interesting thing. The Yodea Inyan Doe. Vafalpi What is Ram saying? Even though it was Mashiach Hashem and a Navi, what is Ram saying? Ram is saying one thing, that a person is never permitted to put himself in that frame of mind, no matter for who, even for the greatest tzaddik. It's an unbelievable thing. What if a person puts himself into that frame of mind that he's like he's like a secondary Sheni Lamelach. Whatever the Gadol says, eh? That frame of mind. He could learn. There is such a frame of mind. I mean, there are people that have this. So it's a Dorig Adomi was not a Russia. He was a great person. He was a tremendous Chacham, a Talmud Chacham, and learned day and night. That's Alefnei Hashem. But what was wrong with him? He had this emotion. He was completely attached to Shaul. Shaul was a Mashiach Hashem, Bechir Hashem. I mean, Ben Shana Shaul B'mocho. I didn't have any chait. So what does the Rambam say? That a person is never allowed to place himself under this emotion. It's an unbelievable thing. No matter who the tzaddik is, even if it's Moshe Rabbeinu, can't do it. Not allowed to do it. A person always has to be related only to one thing, and that is to the source of reality, to God. No intermediaries. People on the whole, masses of people on the whole represent also a leader, superego, a leader.
Same thing,
exact same thing.
Either one individual
or the society. Society is the same function in the human mind as the one great leader. See? And that's why he was Netzel Lefnei Hashem for the people, and also for the leader himself. It's all one constellation in the human mind. You know what I mean? And he was under the sway of that emotion. About Shaul, that Kol HaMarachim Al Achzor, anybody that has sympathy or has pity for a wicked individual, the end result will be that he will be wicked and vicious towards people who really are deserving of sympathy. That's what Chazal say. Why? Because Shaul had Rachmanas and Amalek that were Rishoyim. And in the end, you see how thoroughly he wiped out Novi Arkonim. See? Total riches. Why? Because if a person has Rachmanas, actually there's two things. If a person has Rachmanas and Nachzor, first of all, it shows that the man is not operating rationally. Because rationally, if you have pity on a person who's a Russia, by doing that, ipso facto, you're destroying other people. It's like in today's criminal society. If a person has Rachmanas on a criminal, a killer, what does that mean? What does that show, really? It shows one thing. He really doesn't care about the innocent people that got killed or that will get killed. He really isn't concerned about them. So he's just a misguided emotional identification. That's what his justice is based upon. And if that's the case, so then it's conceivable that since his whole system of justice is just based on certain emotions, so then when things go against him, so then he could destroy everybody. There is no real justice. There is no true attachment to justice. And that's why today's society, because the average person that makes decisions today on what justice should be like has no training in ethics, has no real knowledge of ethics, has no knowledge of themselves, of their own emotions, or has no knowledge at all worthy of the name. So these are the people that are going to make decisions about how justice is going to be carried out. Namonam. You see? So they're just going to go, they only have one barometer to go by. That's their emotions. And that's why society suffers. Three work. According to the Rambam's chat now, how do the three tie in? According to the Rambam's chat. It's interesting, the Rambam himself tells you how to tie it in. But the Rambam's like this. He says, the Elu Shalosh Midas, Rushes, he says, he starts, Rushes Zeu HaShiltonos. Rambam doesn't say it's a mafia group. Shiltonos means that it's just like a monarch. The Elu Shalosh Midas, It's a monarch. We see the Rams as it's a monarch, as Ramses from Shaw. Shaw wasn't an illegal underground type of type of organization. See? So Ram was a Shultana's plan. But anyway, so yes. There shouldn't put in the bottom of the Siddur, one shot. And these three things, there's with these three things, you have two qualities here. There's tikkun ha'amuna, that a person retains his religion, and also ha'olam, and it's also beneficial for the world. The Ram says these three things, and then he goes into it. He says, because if you don't work, so then yigzol v'yizne, he's going to have to steal, and bakash asrara bonus. He's going to be harmful. I guess he doesn't mention harmful to the world, but certainly a person that compromises his values will be harmful, will be bad to be a leader. Right? But the Rambam says really is that any person that has that weakness of the ego, you see, that has that weakness of the ego, should not be a leader. That's what the Rambam says. Why should he not be a leader? Because he'll destroy himself and destroy others. The person has that emotional defect. And that's a psychological type of defect. Not a, you know, it's not something that's bad inherently. Person is born with these, is raised with these things. All right, I'll say. But it's something which is inherent in a person that it's not his fault. But what Chazal say is a person should recognize his nature and he should deal with it. He shouldn't try to deny it. He should recognize it and deal with it. Ram said a person has that weakness should not become a leader. Okay. And then the third thing is that you should never put yourself in the frame of mind in which you are totally subservient to a leader, even the greatest leader, even Mashiach Hashem. You can never put yourself in that frame of mind. That was Doeg HaDoeg. Okay. So the Rambam says these three cases is where you lose your religion, and where you destroy the world. These three things that can corrupt a person and corrupt society, and many things. You have a long list of things that can corrupt society. Why only these three? The Rambam means is that These three things, you see, deal with the basic nature of man. In other words, really there are two, if you ask simply, what are the two most basic needs in man? What are the two most basic needs a person faces in his life? The answer is, one is the need for survival. He has to live, right? There's an instinct for survival. He has to live. So how does he live? He has to live by earning. A person has to live through earning a wage and spending. Then he spends the money on food, on sustenance. So the most basic need that a person has is sustenance. That's the most basic. That's why the Gemara says, "Anius ma'averus es odom me'al daito me'al das kono." Poverty takes a person away from his own state of mind. And from the mind of God, so to speak. Why? It means it makes him be ever thus. Because if a person is poor, it's poverty stricken. He doesn't have his needs. So it's not just physically he's needed. He isn't doing well. But his psyche is so destroyed by the pressures that he can't be involved in perfection anymore. Can't cope with it. So therefore, this is something which does a tremendous drain that will remove a person from perfection. See? And you see, like I told you, the Chazal were mispal for wealth. The Gemara might cut them. Gemara says, yeah, but because that situation is a good one. The situation lends itself to a person having a certain freedom of mind. Where he could learn. Okay, perfect himself. So that's why in Aeneas, poverty is the worst situation for an individual in terms of perfection. That's what Chazal say. Now the Rambam says like this. That's one area a person has to have. Necessities, his needs, must have it, right? That's one. But there's something equally as powerful in the human being, a drive that's equally as powerful as the need to survive. And that is a psychological need. And that psychological need is self-importance. See, it stems from the ego, from a person's ego. See, that's just as powerful as the need for physical sustenance. And Those two instinctual forces are really predominantly what drives a person. World. Take a look at the world large. What really motivates society? What motivates most people? What motivates people to look for political positions? What motivates people to earn large sums of money when they know they can't use it? What's the answer? The answer is position. Position. That's ego. Ego. So basically in man there are two drives. One is the instinct to survive, and the other one is to satisfy a certain psychological part of the mind, a certain psychological constellation. Those two things are really what drives a person predominantly. If you look at what is society made up of, that's essentially what moves society. What is the clamor of life all about? You know? It's all about this, the person's position, his importance, his egoistic satisfaction. That's really what drives a person day and night. You see? So the Rambam says that this memra has to do with these two instinctual forces, and how these two instinctual forces could put a person in a situation where it'll be harmful to himself and where it'll be harmful to society. Now, the first of the two forces is the need for a person's necessities in life. That will put a person, if he doesn't have the necessities, so it'll put him into a situation where he has to steal. Now, once he steals, what happens once he steals? That's how he destroys society. But he destroys himself, because once the person does Navera, he can't face the system anymore. He has to turn away from the system. And once he turns away from the system, that's what Ram says, V'yizne. V'yizne means he'll turn away. He'll turn away because he can't face himself. He's going to go to a base manager and sit and learn now. If they went out and stole, it's impossible. Start the sasri. So therefore, he'll lose his religious values. Then in the second group, the second part of man, the part that looks for recognition, the egoistic part of man, that part of man, the Rambam says, has two expressions that are corrupt. One is where he tries to satisfy the need for acceptance by people. He's motivated, he has good motivation, but he tries to satisfy his need for acceptance by being needed by people. See? That is a situation where he's going to have to compromise. Again, once he compromises, he can't face the true value system anymore, and that's the end of it. Another way the Rambam says is that there's another way that this ego emotion can be satisfied. Sometimes it seeks satisfaction directly. It has to be needed by people. So he goes out and he tries to become a leader where he's needed by people. That's one way that's satisfied. But there's another way that it can be satisfied. The attachment and identification to a leader. That's an indirect method. But the mind works that way. And the egoistic drive can be satisfied in one of those two ways. Either directly, or else via identification with a powerful leader. Directly is the first way. That's what the Rambam says, where he tries to become have a political position. Indirectly is Doeg Adonai. Either way, he's going to be destroyed himself, and he'll destroy society. But the underlying, the unifying fact in the Rambam is that the Rambam is showing you how these two parts of man can lead to his own destruction and to the destruction of the society. Case, you're in a situation where what you do has an effect on society. Either you steal, of course. But in the other two situations, either you yourself are running society, or else if you attach yourself to an important person, so you're also involved in the action of society, like Doeg Adonai, because you're an important figure up there with the great leader. Now he needs you to do this, you have to act. So in either case, you're in a situation where you're going to destroy society. Okay. This question was like this. Do you remember, Shlomo? That's right. As a question like this, since the first is dependency, second one is authority, authoritarianism, and so what do you need a combination of the two? Right? You see, both of them are bad. Okay? What do you say about that? I guess if I know A is bad and I know B is bad, so if C is a combination of A and B, so certainly it's bad. I think over here, I think you need a universal type teretz, a different approach. The thing is like this.
that when it comes to emotions, you see, when it comes to emotions, it's not enough to point out. If I point out to you emotion A is bad, and emotion B is bad, that doesn't necessarily mean that you will, of your own accord, see that that emotion C, which is a combination of A and B, is bad. It's not true. It's true in myth. It's very true. Because in logic, it's true. But in emotions, it's not true. Because the emotions disguise the reality. And one of the most difficult things in psychology is to take a situation and to analyze it, break it down in terms of its particular emotions that make up the phenomena, the emotional phenomena, you see? Because on the contrary, emotionally a person would fool himself and would say, it's neither, you see? It's neither. I'm neither dependent nor am I an authority. See, the emotions fool a person. It's important to point out in an area of ethics, of midos, like Pirkei Avos, you have to point out the combination too. You can't just point out the individual elements. Because in an emotional compound, what happens is the mind does not see the elements that make it up. It could take hours and months to unravel a particular emotion and show what the elements are that it's structured of. You see? So that's why you have to point out the combination. You know what I mean? You must point out the combination. So a person can, on the contrary, can fool himself into thinking it's neither. The mind disguises the reality of the emotions. In order for the mind to understand the emotions, it takes a tremendous effort and a removal from any type of emotional attachment, an objective state, which is very hard to reach, you see. So actually, the combination is necessary to be pointed out. It's a combination. You wouldn't see this as a combination. Because you'd fool yourself into thinking it's a totally different thing. See, the emotions are very subtle. Emotions have a way of fooling a person. A person doesn't recognize what the reality of the basis of the emotions are. So you have to ask me, point it out. What is working? What emotions are working? If a person had ready access to the elements that make up his emotional state, he would be a totally different individual. He wouldn't see it's a combination. Exactly. On the contrary, fool himself, it's disguised. Emotions can subtly disguise a situation so that a person doesn't realize what actually is going on. You know what I mean? Area that in the Avos to Reb Nosson, the Avos to Reb Nosson, which is a pirish on the on Avos. So you have, I would like to read to you some of the things that they say over here. Tell me what you think about the pshat. Okay? Locha ketzad. Perek ha-charasa. Ketzad. Malameh chihei odam oev esam locha val yesone esam locha. Kishem shatara nitna bebris kacha malocha nitna bebris. Shenema. Shesh yom en tavod vasis kom lachtecha v'yom ha-shri shabbos l'shem olikecha. Okay? Rabbi Kiva Meir. Terrible thing that happened. He says that the person doesn't work. So then what happens is he has no money. They take him away and they force him to work. The geisas he used to have in those days. The armies would come and take him away. So he couldn't protect himself, and they made him work on Shabbos. So of course he didn't work on the 6 days. So that's why he came and had to work on Shabbos. Reb Shimon, this is a strange thing. Reb Shimon was Omer Af Adam Arishan Lo Tom Kloma Chasa Malacha Shenema VaYanicheu Began Eden LaOvdol LaShamra. Interesting thing that possible. VaYanicheu Began Eden LaOvdol LaShamra. So you see, Adam Arishan worked even before the curse. All these different chazal. Person doesn't have any work. What should he do? Alright. Alright, all these different chazal. What do these chazal seem to imply? I mean, what's the implication over here? Parod the Mauritian, all these chazal have one underlying implication, which is the what?
Working is a contract.
That working, menial labor, even menial labor, is not contrary to man's nature. On the contrary, it's in line with his nature. See? So why does man despise menial labor? Why?
Why?
Because of his ego. That's what it is. See? Because he does not want to live a life that is in line with reality. In line with the true reality. Which reality does he want to be in line with? So other people's reality. Exactly. And their warped ideas. See? The warped ideas of society, warped egoistic ideas of society, are what destroy the man. And really, if he was in line, if he was alone, if he's like Adam Mauritius, Adam Mauritius didn't have this problem because there's no society around, there's the only man around. So he could live in reality. So if the person was just alone on an island, he would be very happy to work and to have what to and have his necessities. Of course, you know what the Rambam says, this is not a work ethic. I understand it's not a work ethic. Because the Rambam says that how many hours a day should a person work? In Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perek Aleph, Halacha Yud Beis. Ketzad, Hoya Balumnis, Hoya Isaac Bimalachto, Shalosh Shos Bayom, 3 hours a day, Ubetera Tesha, 9 hours a day in learning. Okay? Then the Rambam tells you how to break it up. Isan Atesha, Kareb Shalosh Mehen, Betera Shavik Sav, Ubishalosh Betera Shabal Peh, Ubishalosh Chersmis Bonin Bedaito, Lohovin Agamara Mehen. Okay? It's only in the beginning. But once he knows Torah Shabbat, then he doesn't have to. Ram says. So in the beginning he starts off 3, 3, and 3. 3 hours Torah, 3 hours Torah Shabbat, 3 hours Torah Shabbat Peh, and 3 hours of thought. He says, but then when he becomes a greater scholar, so it's not necessary for him to go spend the 3 hours in Torah Shabbat. So of course the Ram doesn't say that means that he only has 6 hours left of the day to learn. He says, but then what he does is, he says, occasionally he learns Torah Shabbat Ksav, but he spends all 9 hours in thought. That's what the Rambam says in thinking. Okay. So you only have to, you have 3 hours a day, right? 3 hours a day for work, 9 hours for learning, that's 12. How many hours are 8 for sleeping?
You have 4 left.
So you have 4 left. So 4 is for eating and relaxation. That's it. Perfect day. That's the Rambam's perfect day. Okay? Alright. So what I'm telling you is like this, that you see, just like a person who doesn't work is not in reality, a person who works all day is also not in reality. I mean, there's two ways of not being in reality. You see. It's not a work ethic. What Chazal impressed upon us and what Chazal perceived was the life of reality. How a person can truly be happy. See? A person can only truly be happy is if he recognizes the surroundings he finds himself in and the reality that he finds himself in, and he works and adapts himself accordingly. If he doesn't do this, he's heading for trouble. See, there's some distortion in the soul. And if there's a distortion in the soul, then he could never achieve true happiness. It's an impossibility. Simply an impossibility. Person is wealthy and he can sit and learn. I mean, there's no, they don't find a chiyuv like that. It means that if a person is in a situation where he has to work, so then he should look at, let me explain something to you. The enjoyment, the particular enjoyment and the frame of mind that Chazal are aiming for that makes a person happy, I want you to understand, is the frame of mind where the person recognizes that everything he does is because of reality. He's aligned with reality. I don't know if I could explain what that pleasure is, you know what I mean? I think you have to understand what it means. But there's a certain frame of mind that revolves around one mental idea. That I'm living in line with reality. See? I know there are certain philosophers that mention it. It's not I don't know if it's achievable by everybody. Because I think that if a person might, just like the Ram talks about, there's a chulei ha-nefesh. There are spiritual diseases of the soul, you see. So it is possible, I mean, I don't know if possible, I'm sure it's prevalent, that a person is so distorted that he can't really, doesn't know what this enjoyment, doesn't even perceive the enjoyment. But there is a certain enjoyment that a person should receive from the fact that he's living in line with reality. Philosophers have achieved that enjoyment, know what that enjoyment is. Line with reality, but they're not they don't enjoy that idea. You know what I mean? What I'm saying is that there's an enjoyment of the idea itself. You see?
Yeah.
Is that most people, you know, are in a state of perfection, and man is created. The basic premise of Yadis is that man is created in a way that by nature he is not perfected, like the Rambam says. You know, so therefore he has to change himself in order to perfect himself. He has to go. Now he is the only creature, in other words, he's the only creature that is not naturally in line with reality. The other creatures, animals, are, and they find themselves in the natural. If they're in the natural habitat, they're in line with reality automatically. Man is. Man has to make himself into a being that is in line with reality, but it requires a lot of work. You see. Now, the thing is like this: that when a person who is not a perfected individual, so his soul is pulling him from different sides. Now, the things that his soul are pulling him towards are false. They're false. Now, even though he may believe in them, you see, the truth of the matter is there is always a part of him that recognizes it's nonsense. See, that recognizes it's nonsense. And as much as he tries to push that part down, you see, he cannot really destroy it, because that part is a part of man, and it's his mind, you see, that recognizes that there is something wrong here. That's why the famous story, I mentioned so many times, famous story of the great and Diogenes. And famously, that story, I think, illustrates this more than anything else. Now, why was Alexander the Great the greatest conqueror in the world? And he goes over to the philosopher, Diogenes. What can I give you? There's anything in the world that you want, I'll get for you. And he says, move away, you're blocking the sunlight. You see? Now that, why does that destroy Alexander? Why does it destroy Alexander the Great? It's not just Alexander the Great, it's anybody that has crazy values. Because, why should it bother him? He's convinced that conquest is the biggest thing. What bothers him? What does it show? It shows you that deep down he also knows this is false. See? Because Gama nefesh lo tamale, the pasuk says. The soul will never be satisfied. What does it mean the soul is never satisfied? The Shlomo Melech says. It means that as much as if a person fools himself into thinking that these other things are going to satisfy him, he himself senses he's not satisfied. There's a certain unrest. Or a shoyim kayom nigrash. A rush is a person that's turbulent, that has a turbulent life. Why? Because his inner, he could never have an inner peace because he's not in line with reality. Now, the individual senses this. He senses this. And his mind tells him that there's something wrong. And his mind tells him also that the things that he values as the solution to this problem are not really going to resolve the problem because he's still doing the same thing he did yesterday. But he pushes everything out of his mind. You see? But the truth of the matter is that there is something always disturbing him. See? Just like Alexander the Great, down deep, Alexander the Great knows that all this conquest is nothing more than crazy compulsion. He knows that. There's no basis in reality. For what? What is he doing? But he has to put himself in that frame of mind and get out there and another conquest. This is the next one that's going to really be the one that's going to give me happiness.
Well, why won't he act on his rational?
Emotional forces are too powerful. Now, when he Diogenes, that's why the reason Diogenes doesn't break him down. The pshat is he himself is already subject to breakdown. Because he himself broke himself down before, you see. This just gives a little touch of reality to what he himself always says. Now, just like from that, once you understand that phenomena, then you can understand the other phenomena as well. The person who has really achieved a state of happiness because he's in line with reality senses it. So he senses it. And he enjoys the fact that his soul is at peace with itself and that it's experiencing, it's in a state which is in line with the reality. That enjoyment is a tremendous enjoyment. You see? And that's the enjoyment that Chazal are pointing to with the Erevas HaMelacha. So that's why if a person, it doesn't mean that the person should work 3 hours a day, regardless of what a situation is. See, that's not what Chazal means. If a person doesn't have to work 3 hours a day, and he could learn all day, then that's his reality. The enjoyment that Chazal are pointing to is in a general situation. I mean, most people don't have a stipend where they can sit and learn, so they have to work. So Chazal are taking that situation, and they're trying to show you the normal situation, the way the world was created, what the reaction should be. Of course, if you have an individual who doesn't have to work, it would be ridiculous, man, go out and just carry weights from one place to another 3 hours a day. Of course, you understand, it's absurdity. What it means is the enjoyment that Chazal are talking about is the enjoyment of being in line with reality in a normal situation. And that enjoyment can only be perceived by a perfected individual. A person like that doesn't mind work. And Adam Arishan also had his work, even before the chait. See? Before the curse, he had his work. But that work was not something that made him unhappy. That's the way God created him. And he was happy to go in and do whatever it was. It wasn't, of course, something that was... It wasn't like the Rambam says. The Rambam says, if you take a look the way God created the world, he made the world in the way that necessities, the real necessities, are such that they're practically for nothing. I mean, air, the greatest necessity. A person is free. And water, the second necessity. The world is abundant with water. I mean, the world is constructed in a way that man can find himself in a situation that he doesn't really have to work that hard. I mean, bread is something which isn't that expensive. He says the world was created in a way that a person, if he was perfected, would not have to spend the whole day in work. But the amount of time that he does have to spend work is good for him. It's good because it's a recognition and appreciation of what the reality that God created for him is. And that reality is not bad. That's what the Rambam said. The beginning of Mesilas Yesharim, you look at the Rambam and the Mor, you find they're diametrically opposed. Because the Mesilas Yesharim starts off, he says, this life is a terrible life, and there's so many illnesses, and this and that, and tzaras, and problems, and all. And therefore, he says, the only purpose of the human life is for Olam Abba. That's what the Mesilas Yesharim says. Comes to that conclusion. The Rambam says just the opposite of the Mor. He says, no! He says, on the whole, he says, look at the picture on the whole. Picture on the whole, he says, it's amazing that you have that disease really is a rare thing. How many people really are completely destroyed by disease in terms of ratio? It's very few. And most people, especially with medicine, I mean, has the ability to help people medically. So you don't find that most people are not bothered. Most people are not bothered. They can go on with their lives. You see, and the necessities of life are readily available.